That's where we get January. That's why we have January at the beginning of the year. And it's named after Janus. And Janus is the god, by the way, in gaming terms, it's the god of all portholes. So if you're into gaming and you Google Janus, he's the god that helps with all portholes, which is an important thing. But the main idea behind Janus, and also why he has a nail right in between the two heads. That's not part of it. But the important thing of him is he looks back at what happened, he reflects, and he also looks ahead into the future. And that's what we do at the beginning of a year, or the majority of us. And whether you are a cynic or not, you cannot really escape the fact that all of society is looking back and looking forward to where we are going. The media does it, and to some of you it might be annoying, but if you follow the media in the last couple of months, what they are saying is, this is what happened in 2016, a summary of 2016. So you guys would have read the biggest moments of 2016, and you have the junk status that features. You have Donald Trump that features. And then they would say, how to survive 2017, big things that we need to look out for in 2017. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Do you identify what I'm talking about? Okay. Now that's a little bit of Janus, looking back and looking forward. Our resolutions and the little bit of interaction that I have with people, I found that our resolutions are mostly superficial, not necessarily in a bad way, but mostly they are superficial. And those brave souls among you might want to share some of your resolutions tonight. It normally has something to do with weight loss. Okay, so after the December holiday and the indulgence and the gluttony that comes with Christmas and New Year's, you'd notice that there's a lot of gymnasium advertisements in January, and big specials, and the holiday flab or the love handles or couches or bars can be run off on a treadmill at a cheap gym somewhere. So usually it has to do something with weight loss or eating healthy. My New Year's resolutions for the last 5 years has been to get a scuba license and to remember my friends' birthdays. And those of you consider yourselves to be my friends would know that I haven't kept one of them, and I don't have a scuba license. So most of the time, these New Year's resolutions are somewhat superficial. Anyone wants to share their resolutions? Yeah, Peter.
Selling and dieting. Staying away from carbs.
Okay. staying away from carbs, as in the fish. Oh, carbs. Okay. Okay, there we go. Anything else? Thanks, Peter. Thank you for being brave. Thank you for sharing. Yes. To lose weight. Okay. Nico? To gain some weight. All right, I'm going to give you about 5 minutes, and everybody wants to give him a punch in the face. You guys are welcome. Anything else?
Finish qualification.
All right. Now, when we think of our resolutions, and let's think of the weight loss thing, I can tell you that that's very superficial. And it's not necessarily invested in the Bible. But then you might refer me to Daniel, and Daniel was a healthy eater, and he was attractive, and God kind of condoned that. And God is very much against, or the Bible, it seems to be against gluttony. Okay, so it's not that superficial. But what I would say is that the Bible treats New Year's resolutions, it treats reflection and the future with a different nuance, in a different way. So we've got Janus, and let's use that as our secular model for how to deal with it, how to reflect and how to look in the future. And now I want to deal a little bit with some biblical scenarios or models for this. So let me read to you out of Deuteronomy 8:11, verse 19. So, The context for this is that the Israelites have been traveling through the desert for about 40 years. They are out of Egypt. They are not slaves anymore. And they've crossed the Sinai Peninsula. First, they crossed the Red Sea. Then they crossed the Sinai Peninsula, which is a part of Egypt. And then they crossed into what's modern-day Jordan. And in the mountains of Jordan, they've got massive mountains on the border with the Jordan River. And they are over there, and they are looking into the promised land in what we call today Israel. So they're looking into it. And God is giving them lecture after lecture with the same themes. He's repeating himself time after time. And here's one of those themes. So this is in Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. Be careful that you don't forget the Lord your God by failing to keep his command, the ordinances and statutes that I'm giving you today. When you eat and are full and build beautiful houses to live in, and your herds and flocks grow large, and your silver and gold multiply, and everything else you have increases, be careful that your heart doesn't become proud and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the place of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its poisonous snakes and scorpions, a thirsty land where there was no water. He brought water out of the flint-like rock for you. He fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers had not known, in order to humble and test you, so that in the end he might cause you to prosper. You may say to yourself, my power and my own ability have gained me this wealth. But remember that the Lord your God gives you the power to gain wealth in order to confirm his covenant he swore to your fathers as it is today. If you ever forget the Lord your God and go after gods to worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will perish. And I want to read that alongside a passage in Mark, just I think three verses. This is in Mark 1, verse 9 to 11. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth into Galilee and was baptized in the Jordan by John. As soon as he came up out of the water, he saw the heavens being torn open, and the Spirit descended on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my beloved Son, and I take delight in you." So I want to talk about these two passages under the heading of dependency on God. So that would be the heading, and I want to look at four different things. The first one is how these two passages helps us to reflect, first of all, how to approach the future, the warning against idols, and then how to start. Okay? So the last one, ironically, is how to start. How to reflect, how to approach the future, a warning against idols, and how to start. So how to reflect. So they're on the mountains, and they've got this view, like I said, of Egypt. You can see Egypt on a good day. In those days, they didn't have Sussel or anything like that, so I assume they were able to see Egypt. And they can see the promised land on this side. And God is telling them, remember this. I want you to remember that you guys, where you came from, and where you came from is this. You were in slavery, and you didn't do anything special. I chose you, and you are lucky. You're not cute. I chose you. You are lucky. This is what's happened. All right. And he wants his people to remember this. And there's this very funny passage, and this is a couple of verses on, where he says the following. This is in Deuteronomy 9, verse 6. Understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, because for you are a stiff-necked people. That's quite a funny way of describing it. So God is giving them this pep talk upon pep talk with these repetitive themes, and he's saying, you are not getting this because I'm rewarding you for being special. You are a stiff-necked people. Remember that. Now, why is it so important? We tend to remember selectively as human beings. That's what we do. We remember selectively. So to give you an example, I spoke at a Bible school at Modletta Park a couple of, well, I think it was last year. And I actually forgot about it, and I didn't have a chance to prepare. So when I realized that I need to talk at this conference, I got my notebook and I got into my topic, and I remember asking the guy, what's my topic? I actually had to look for my topic on the advertisement for the event. And I'm really worried, and I start making notes, and I read a couple of Bible verses. And then you come to that point, and I think maybe not all of you, but a lot of you have reached this, where to prepare is not going to help anymore. It's too late. You can just as well just pray. Just leave it. You can go walk around or take a bath or something. It's not going to help. It's too late. I start to pray, because that's where I'm at. And I remember there's a speaker before me, and whilst that guy is speaking, I am profusely making notes and trying to figure out what to say. And I remember praying, God, please use this. I'm not sure how you're going to do it, because I'm not giving you much to use, but please use this. Please forgive me for not preparing. Forgive me for not preparing. Forgive me for forgetting about this thing. And I continue along those lines, and I prayed pretty much going up. I'm not sure whether it was audible or not. And I spoke, and it felt horrible. I could see all of these faces, knowing that this guy obviously didn't prepare. And I'm stumbling over my words, and it wasn't even Afrikaans, so I didn't even have the language excuse. And I sat down, and I thought, Lord, just help. Just do with that what you want, and please get me out of here. I don't want to look at anybody. I don't want to look at the organizer, because the organizer, I can't look at her at the moment. And I go home. Lorraine asks me, she phones me, how was it? I said, well, it was a horrible experience, and I'm so mad, and I really need to diarize these things, and etc. And the following day, I receive an email that says, we've had a series, we've had a couple of speakers, and by far, you've been the best. And I'm okay. And I receive another email confirming what this person just experienced. I thought, well, I didn't have stiff competition. And I like to say that because Rudolf spoke before me. And there were lots of other people who spoke. And I'm trying to reflect on it, and I'm trying, what did I say? And I remember, oh, yeah, that was kind of funny. I said that one thing. That was kind of funny. Yeah. I think that landed well. And I'm going on, and I think, yeah. You know what? Maybe I don't even have to prepare. Those other people prepared, and they sucked. I don't even have to prepare. That's how good I am. And as time goes on, and I am selectively recollecting what happened there, I'm starting to twist what happened there. I'm really starting to twist. It was a miracle. It was a miracle that those people didn't fall asleep, didn't start an anti-U1 website or a Facebook group. It was a miracle. And time goes by, God uses it in some way, and I end up being the hero. Now, I imagine, because I'm a human, and because this is a human condition, and the Jews that were led out of slavery were human as well, I suspect, after 40 years of wandering in the desert, now they're on their way into the promised land, some of them might have said, you know what, Egypt is probably the strongest civilization that's existed on the face of the earth. We still go there today to look at their monuments. Very strong, best military at that stage. And we just basically walked out of there. We walked out of there. I mean, who's done that before? Who's walked out of Egypt and say, no thanks, guys, I'm going? And we survived for 40 years in the desert. Now, that's impressive. I'm not sure if you've seen Survivor lately. They struggle in a rainforest for a couple of weeks. We've done it in the desert for 40 years. We're pretty amazing. And when we go into that promised land, we really deserve this. We came a long way, literally. Can you imagine that selective memory can take place? Why did they go out of Egypt? God emphasizes this. If you don't believe me out of Deuteronomy 8, read the whole of Deuteronomy. You did nothing. You did nothing. I know that you guys are selectively remembering what happened. You did nothing. You did nothing. You're a stiff-necked people. By the way, you did nothing. You did not achieve this because of what you did, but you achieved this because of who I am. So when we reflect, to bring it back to our New Year's resolutions, and as we reflect on 2016, a biblical way of approaching that is to say, I want to thank you, God, for everything that's happened in 2016. I want to thank you for all those things that you made something out of it. I sucked at that thing, and I really tried my best, but you did something with it. So when we reflect, an anti-boasting reflection mechanism is this. All the good things that happened, it's a gift from God. So that's how I think, from a Bible perspective, we need to reflect, not only on 2016, but on anything in the past, as a gift from God. And in this room, there's not a lot of people, but there's been a PhD, there's kids, new relationships. We six people got married, promotions, etc. It's very easy in hindsight to say, I did well. 2016, good year. And just before you got married, when you were single, you remember saying, God, please, I don't want to be alone. I beg you. And now you're saying, I'm pretty hot. I got married. It worked quite well. And when you were doing your PhD or your master's degrees or whatever, you think there were stages where you were so stuck. You said, God, you need to help me out here. I've got nothing to say anymore. This is horrible. And there I'm sending it into the cyber world, and these examiners are going to look at it, and it's not going to work. And God, please help me. And now I've got the PhD. You say, I'm a doctor. I'm the doctor, or I'm the professor, or I'm the master, or the honors. Not that we use those terms, but I think we should, because I think master is cooler than being a doctor or a professor. But we've got a selective memory. And it's important to give everything back to God, to treat it as a gift. Let's go on to the second one. How to treat the future. So in Deuteronomy 8, verse 12 to 14, in the passage that we read, he says, and when your herds and flocks grows large, and you've got silver, and you've got gold, and everything else increase, be careful that your heart doesn't become proud, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the place of slavery. Can you see how that thing is just repeated again? So all of the opportunities that's awaiting you in 2017, God is saying, remember where it comes from. It's a gift. Yes, you worked hard for it, but you got a job, and everything is a gift. That kind of, it's one of the things that sort of sucks of Christianity. You can't really take credit for it. It's a God-given thing. It's a God-given opportunity. So that means that how we treat the future is to see everything, all the opportunities that's ahead of us, to see it as a gift. And there's actually an agricultural metaphor that we get in Deuteronomy 11. And it reads like this. For the land you are entering to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you sowed your seed and irrigated by hand as in a vegetable garden. But the land you are entering to possess is a land of mountains and valleys watered by rain from the sky. Now that is interesting. Why is he saying that? He's saying that because they came from Egypt, and Egypt's got one massive water lifeline. What's it called? The Nile, all right. The Nile. And they make use of that to such an extent that if you look at Google Maps or a picture of Egypt, you can see just this green stretch all along the Nile. And they've used pretty impressive systems to get the water from there to irrigate land, desert pretty much, far from it. And what God is telling them is that Israel is not the same. You don't have a massive water system. The Jordan River, well, I mean, it's not that impressive. It's like the Arpies. And when Winston Churchill said, I swam the mighty Arpies, or if we say we crossed the mighty Jordan, we might be over-exaggerating a little bit. So there's not a massive water source, but God says, and he uses this agricultural metaphor to say, you know, this is going to be different. You are not going to be impressed or boast about your engineering ingenuity, but you're going to be dependent on God, and you're going to look up to the sky, and that's how you're going to treat your life, and not just in agricultural terms, but in everything. So when we look at the future, we don't look at our own skills. Now, this is not an excuse to not use our skills, not to be creative. But it is saying this, you would be dependent on God. And all the opportunities that's ahead of you, you would look to God for it and thank Him for it. All right, the third thing, the third point that I think this passage highlights is that it's a stark warning against idols. In Deuteronomy 8, verse 19, I think the passage ended like that. It said, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods to worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will perish. Now, we've got the vantage point at this stage. And that's one of the nice things about a new year. We've got a bit of a vantage point. You managed to get perspective. Maybe you saw a movie that inspired you, or you've been away long enough of your work or of your job to just step back and get a little bit of perspective. And that's the same perspective that these Israelites have at the moment, because remember, they are in the mountains. They can see the promised land over there. They can see where they come from, and God is lecturing them. At the beginning of the year, we've got a little bit of perspective. And he says, but remember this, if you, as soon as you enter reality and you are not on this hill anymore and you cannot see what's going to happen or what happened, and as soon as you go in and you see something and it's right in front of you, you might worship that. Now, that sounds primitive to us. We think that that is something that only happens in the Old Testament. God is always angry at them for idolizing a golden calf. And we think, how stupid can they be for worshiping the golden calf? But we've got thousands of golden calves in our own life. So, for instance, we can make all these lofty resolutions. And when we get into the year, February, March, this job is really important, and this project becomes a little bit hectic and more demanding. And all of a sudden, your resolution of really seeing your job just as a job and to treat it as such goes from an 8-hour job to a 10-hour to a 12-hour to a weekend job. I mean, it's important that I can see some of you guys are looking at each other. And we'll talk about judgment tomorrow. But we do one of two things. If we do not see a job as a gift from God, then we do one of two things. We either neglect it, we take it for granted, it's just a job, it's stupid, I can come late, I can go early, I don't really worry, I'm not passionate about this. That's the one option. And the other option is that we can idolize it. And you say, if this does not come off, I will literally die, which is kind of weird how we've used the word literally these days. I saw that guy and I literally died. I literally died. That is, you cannot use that word more wrong than that. But we absolutize this thing. We absolutize this thing that is work. And remember, this is this beast that you are staring in the face at the moment. That's all you have. And God says, remember the perspective you had when you were in the mountain. Remember what that looked like. And an example that came to me early today when I thought about this is when you're in the moment, it feels massive, right? It feels like this is this beast in front of you that you need to conquer, and you can't think of anything else. And then if you just have a little bit of perspective, you put it in perspective. And one of the ways that I realized this is, and you guys will identify with it, when you're at school, certain things are very important to you. That boy or that girl, or prefect, being a prefect is really important, or making that team. And you think, if I do not make that team, I'm going to literally die, okay? Or if I do not get that girl or that boy, I'm going to literally die. And when you talk as a high school student to somebody in primary school, and they tell you it's so important for that person to be a class captain, I really wanted to be class captain. And when you've got that benefit of hindsight, you say, that's really stupid. Cute, but stupid, okay? Because you've got more of a perspective. That for that little girl or that little boy, that's everything at the moment. If I do not go to matric farewell with that boy, I mean, we've got movies and we laugh about those things, but when they're in it, that's the beast that they see. That's everything. And we're standing on the mountains and say, that's really stupid. We're laughing at you. And that's how silly our idols become, right? That's how silly they become. And you know how you can determine it. If you, and that's why you need to be in a cell group, by the way. Because if you share some of your issues, for instance, you're this beast at work that you're facing and this problem that you have, and it's I can't understand it, it's so massive, and you share it with somebody, and they stand on the outside, and usually it sounds kind of stupid. Am I right? When they say, you know, this person always does that, and I can't understand it, it kind of sounds stupid. And when that person exposes it to you, that's kind of stupid. Then you realize, I'm making a beast out of this thing. I am idolizing this thing and taking it out of context or out of perspective. What about other things? Warning against idols. If your New Year's resolution is, I want to be healthy, that's fine. I want to eat healthy. I want to exercise. There's nothing wrong with it. If you neglect your body, that's a problem. If you do not see it as a gift from God. But if you idolize it, it becomes very problematic. And Lorraine and I have been blessed enough to travel quite well this December festive season. And I saw more than I would have liked what happens when people idolize themselves or their bodies. The amount of selfies that I saw during this festive season, probably more than the amount of times that we've breathed in the last couple of years. It's ridiculous. The self-obsession that we have. I think our culture, and this is probably a different sermon, I might go on a tangent, but we've reached a superficiality that is really, really unhealthy. People, they don't even see Jerusalem or the sea or wherever they go. They only see their reflection in this in this cell phone, in this iPhone. And I'm glad that Leah is as annoyed with this as I am. And it's an unhealthy relationship with yourself. If you go to gym, I haven't been there, I want to say lately or ever, but a couple of times that I went there, it is amazing how many times you are supposed to stare at yourself in the mirror, right? And it's so weird. I think it just creates the illusion of friendship. That's why they have the mirrors over there. But you literally look at yourself whilst you're putting up a weight. And you are admiring it. And I tell you, the guys are worse than the girls. That's what's happening. And I think it is a very obvious example of what happens when we idolize. So let us not say the Old Testament with their idols and their golden calves, they are so primitive. We worship the self. We worship the job. We worship relationships. We think, we invest so much, we idolize a relationship with somebody, and you think, if this ends now, then everything will end with it. And you are so worried because you can't think of yourself outside of, in a relationship with this person, and that's unhealthy. So, a stark warning against idols, whilst we have some perspective at the beginning of 2017. Last point I want to make is this. How to start. We've given a biblical model for reflection, how to deal with the future, how to see it, warning against some idols, and how to start, how to take the first step. Now, can I ask you, just to be a little bit vulnerable maybe, and tell me, whom of you are anxious for the new year? Whom are you a little bit worried about what lies ahead of us? Okay, and I can put up my hand. I can see everybody's putting up their hands. It's like that Dead Poets Society where everybody starts, my captain. We've got a whole room. And anxiety, to look at this new year and to be overwhelmed about the things that you want to achieve or it lies waiting for you. That's something that I can very much identify with, and it's a real thing. And it's almost difficult to take that first step. I'm not sure if some of you have already gone back to work. There's project deadlines that's in the near future. And that first step is very nerve-wracking. And I think the passage that we read out of the Bible, well, out of the New Testament, is very helpful for that. So if you're overwhelmed and you've got all these deadlines, you've got all these things to do, God tells us to do this. If you're overwhelmed, you've really got a lot of stuff to do, do this. Rest. Now, that's very countercultural, isn't it? Rest. If you're worried, you're overwhelmed, you're not going to be able to do all of those things, chill. We just came back from Israel, and we saw a lot of Orthodox Jews. And what's interesting is when it is Sabbath. Now, Sabbath for the Jews is when the sun sets on the Friday, okay? When the sun sets on the Friday, everything closes. As a matter of fact, I think most zombie apocalypse movies are shot in Israel over the Sabbath because all the streets are empty. It's quite bizarre. And that's the start of the Sabbath. Now remember, the Sabbath is the start of the week. We think it is a reward for the week's work. Am I right? We think you have to work and then you are rewarded with the weekend. Start of the week, Monday. Oh, not looking forward to it. That's not a Christian or a Jewish understanding of it. Jews say Sabbath. That's when the week starts. And the first thing the Jews do when the week starts is what? Is sleep. They sleep. That's the first thing we do. When we think the week is going to start, okay, I need to wake up 4 o'clock. I need to go to the gym. That's what I need to do. And then I need to get to my computer before my colleagues get there so that I'm just a little bit on the ball and so that I can welcome them in the office and they can't welcome me in the office. I need to do this and this. That's how I start my week. But God is saying, start your week by going to sleep. Now, that's bizarre. But there's a massive testimony in that. What you are basically saying is this. When I start my week, I am so dependent on God that I am going to rest in Him. I'm going to rest in Him. And I am trusting Him to wake me up tomorrow. But my week starts with resting in God. Isn't that an amazing testimony? So countercultural. No, there's no time to rest. We're in trouble. Deadlines. Rest in God. I'm not talking about rest by watching series. Rest in God. That's how that Sabbath starts, the beginning of the week. And when you do that, you are actually acknowledging that God is in control of everything. You are acknowledging it by going to sleep. I think this is so amazing. Now, what's interesting about this, in this Mark passage, this is the beginning of Jesus' ministry. The beginning of his ministry. He's got this massive thing to do, which we call change the world, okay? His public ministry, he's got about 3 years to do it. And the first thing he does is he goes to be baptized. And after he's baptized, he looks up and it says, a voice came and said, "This is my son in whom I am delighted." That's the start of his ministry. Can you see how he entered the rest? The rest, as in the Sabbath rest, and then went into his ministry. He didn't do that. He didn't do his ministry, changed the world, died for our sins and everything, you know, those things. And then God said, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." That's not how it works. It is, you are fine. This is your identity. Go play. Am I right? This is your identity. You are my beloved sons and daughters. Go play. This is the first day of the week. You've acknowledged it. Go out to the second day, which is the Monday, second day of the week, and just go play for the rest of it. Our identity precedes our mission. Our identity precedes our mission. I want to invite the worship team up so long because I want us to sing a few songs. Now, why I use this Mark passage as well alongside the Deuteronomy passage is because they are very much linked. Why are they linked? Where is Jesus being baptized? This is the part where you guys help me out. Where is Jesus being baptized? In the Jordan River. Thanks, Lorraine. Good job. Good thing that we went through the notes before we came here. you have the desert scene. How many days will he be tempted in the desert? 40 days. Can you see how this is parallel to what's happening with the Israelites? 40 days or 40 years in the desert. They are going into the promised land. They're crossing the Jordan. What's happening with Jesus? He's being baptized and he is taking us into the promised land. And for us to enter the promised land begins with this. Resting in God, knowing our dependency on him and our identity in him. We are sons and daughters of God. And it's difficult to think of the new year or 2017 in that way. But that's the biblical way of, I think, starting this new year. The four things, I want to go through it again. How to reflect, how to look at the future, be very wary of the idols. And fourthly, how to take that first step, how to start. And we started with resting in Christ. Let me pray and then the worship team will take us ahead, take us forward from there. Lord, it is my prayer that you would make your presence felt in everyone's life here tonight. And it sounds like such a cliche, but it's my prayer that we can experience that divine rest, that divine knowledge of our identity before we've done anything, and we are overwhelmed when we think of everything that needs to happen in this coming year. But help us to just be so overwhelmed, not by the year, but by your immense love for us, that we are your sons and daughters, and we do not receive that because of any merit, anything that we've done, but because of who you are. Help us to approach the year like that. Help us to be thankful of everything that happened. Help us to treat life as a gift, past and present. And Lord, now, whilst we've got a little bit of perspective, to already identify the possible idols that awaits us in 2017. And to remind ourselves, Lord, as you constantly remind us, never forget, I am your God. I took you out of slavery. Never forget that I am giving all of these things as a gift to you. Remind us of that. In Jesus' name, amen.